Now, the last time that I led a retreat was just last weekend, and we had somebody there who was incorporating Qigong into it, and I asked him to make a transition so that there'd be some energy in the room. And my partner got up afterwards and said, okay, now you might not know that Stephen was leading it, but I'm a girly girl. And when you ask me to do this with makeup on, I sit here like this. And when you ask me to play with my hair, I go like this. So they went back and forth about it all weekend. It was really fun. I'm so happy to be here with you. It's wonderful to see some faces I've seen before, and I'm so honored to be sitting between the two of you. It's just really lovely and a privilege. And La was kind enough to pick me up from the airport yesterday, and we went out to lunch, and we were both talking about how being a Dharma teacher is a little bit like that Woody Allen conversation, like who'd come to a retreat that I'm leading kind of thing, you know? It's like, but there you have it. There you have it. Just thoughts. So I wanted to start out by telling you a little story about my own personal little retreat. I was on retreat in December, this past December, a couple months ago. I was at the Forest Refuge, and then I was actually at the women's retreat with Christina Feldman and Narayan. Was anybody at that women's retreat that's here? I didn't think I saw too many familiar faces, but I was not in a good place when I went to that retreat. In fact, I almost considered not going because, as Tara said, I was a cop for 20 years, and I think I would have had rather had bullets flying over my head than sit with the state that I was in. I was in a black hole. And I could go through lots of reasons what got me in that black hole, and I was very disappointed about being in that black hole. What was I doing wrong with my practice that I was there I was again in that black hole without much space where everything just felt heavy. I almost canceled the retreat, but my partner assured me I could go to the other side of the country and be just as miserable as I was there. And so I did. I got on the plane, and I went out to the Forest Refuge, and I might not have gotten on the plane, except I'm too cheap. I'd already paid for it. I knew things. In this practice, you learn how the texture of your emotions can so color how you're perceiving things and what you're thinking, right? And so I walked into the meditation hall that evening, first evening I was there, and there was somebody doing prostrations to the Buddha. And normally I would think, oh, it's so beautiful. Well, my thought that night was, oh, for Christ's sake, give me a break. And all I could say to myself was, oh, geez, Sherry, the volume's a little loud. Maybe just turning it down a little bit. And then I thought, well, you know, there's really nothing I have to do here except sit with this. And, oh, I have to do a yogi job. And I'll be fine as long as it's not pot washing. It was. You know, and not just at the Forest Refuge, but at the women's retreat, too. So it was pot washing the entire time. And I grew to love pot washing. It was all perfect. But the reason I'm telling this story is that it did change for me over the course of whatever it was. I think it was 20 days that I was out there, somewhere 18. And I've had wonderful retreats where I've just been in a state of absolute stillness and vastness and that spaciousness where it is so easy to feel my interconnectedness with everybody and everything. And I did have lots of those moments by the end of my time out there. Many, 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 many. In fact, many more of those moments than I had of the former. And I thought to myself, this too shall pass. When I was in the stillness and the vastness and the wonderful time, this too shall pass. And when I was in that, I felt like I was graduating when I felt like I'd gone from the black hole to the more. I'm in the moor. I can't quite make it out of the moor. Did you ever read about the English moors? They're just full of fog and everything feels dull and heavy. But, you know, I would sit. And sometimes I would just sit for little periods. And I could feel that spaciousness. I could just feel the texture of the experience changing some. And I could feel this sense of opening occurring. And I walked. And I sat. And I walked. And I sat. And what was so interesting about that retreat for me is I did, when I showed up at the more structured setting, I did every single sitting. I did every single walking. I had never done every single walking before. And I practiced with a sincerity of heart that I'd never known before. And that experience was more valuable to me than, I can't tell you how many retreats I've been on, some for shorter than that, some for longer, because it gave me such incredible confidence in the practice and that I can sit with anything, with absolutely anything. And, you know, the good news is that it changes. The bad news is that it changes, depending upon where you are and what's going on for you. And it just is. These are just little energy pockets moving through in these wonderful, wonderful ways. And what we're doing here on retreat is that we're nourishing our practice and we're creating this special container of safety to hold not just our practice, but the practice of each other. And what's so wonderful about that container, it's something that each of us contributes to individually and something that each of us draws from in a very, very powerful way. It's such an incredible lesson in interdependence, because the energy, you can just feel the energy of this many people sitting and their patience and the dedication and the beautiful energy of that container and how it grows over the weekend. So basically, and I think it's such an intimate act to sit next to somebody at a retreat. So we're on this spiritual pilgrimage together. And it's really quite wonderful because that creates a certain sense of intimacy. And we're creating a sacred space here with a set of special conditions that are designed to nourish our individual and collective practice. And those special conditions are that we're released from the daily details of our lives. Somebody's going to be cooking for us, right? I mean, there's nothing we have to do. There's nowhere we have to be. We don't have to clean our houses. We don't have to go to work. We don't have to care for many of the people that we care for when we're at home. We're in noble silence, which is just so nurturing. We don't have to be anybody. We don't have to perform for anybody. We just get to be in that silence. And then we have this other special condition where we limit outside stimuli and sensory input in a way that makes it become even more alive. You'll see that the eyes and the ears get very big during walking meditation. And when you're exposed to things, once you slow down. But we're limiting outside stimuli. We're limiting conversations. That doesn't stop the ones that go on in our heads, of course. But we're limiting writing. We're limiting reading. We're limiting the ability to reach for something outside to cut the edge. And it's that kind of practice that is so meaningful in terms of helping us get in touch with that awareness of our true self that La was talking about. And in order to support that container of practice and the safety in that container of practice, those special conditions also include a commitment to follow what's known as the five precepts while on retreat. And we'll be asking you to commit to the short version while you're on retreat just to notice and be part of creating that container. Now, I grew up with Thich Nhat Hanh. I was a member of the Order of Interbeing and then He ordained me as a Dharma teacher, and I can remember we used to call them precepts 20 years ago. And over time, I noticed he changed the name to mindfulness trainings. And when I asked Thay, which is what it means teacher in Vietnam, which is what we call him, he said that that he noticed that especially Westerners with the word precepts started treating these things like commandments. And he wanted people to understand that this is part of a container that nourishes us. It's not something we do wrong. It's not something that somebody wags a finger at you because you didn't do correctly. So mindfulness trainings was meant to reflect that. And following them literally helps train us in mindfulness. And as Law said, the precepts originated with the Buddha. The Buddha wanted a way to help lay people create a container for themselves. And they're part of the path. They're part of the Noble Eightfold Path. They reflect the skills of the Noble Eightfold Path. And at the heart of the precepts is the value of non-harming. The value of non-harming ourselves, which reflects and others, which reflects the value, really, of all spiritual traditions that encourage us to lead an ethical life. And the great gift of leading an ethical life is that we begin to engage in choices and actions that don't leave behind residue in our minds, that don't leave behind this residue that comes from not acting in alignment with our truest selves. So in my tradition, they're called mindfulness trainings, and they're considered the equivalent of a guiding northern star. When you get off the course and you notice you're off course, you just correct the course and start moving back in the directions. You start moving back in the direction of the mindfulness trainings, the direction of peace, the direction of love, the direction of awakening, the direction of liberation from our suffering. And because they have the capacity to protect life in such a powerful way and to cultivate love, they're considered the foundation of individual and collective happiness. So I'd like to close this introductory part by sharing the five mindfulness trainings that were transmitted to me 20 years ago in my own practice, and then the shortened version that you'll find on the back of the three refuges that we're asking you to commit to for the weekend. So the first mindfulness training in my tradition, and you actually make a choice to have these transmitted to you. So at the very first retreat I was at 21 years ago with Thich Nhat Hanh, I chose to receive the transmission of these trainings from him. And at first I was like, no, I can't do that, can't do that, can't do that. And there was a question and answer session. And then we were very small. He wasn't nearly as famous as he is now. And somebody asked me, well, why can't you do that? And I said, well, I'm a cop. I carry a gun for a living. And they said, well, who else would we want to carry a gun for a living except somebody who would do it mindfully? It was really pretty cool. I hadn't thought about it like that. So I took these mindfulness trainings, and here's the version I took. The first mindfulness training, reverence for life. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating mindful ways to protect all forms of life. I will practice looking deeply to develop compassion and learn ways to work mindfully for the welfare of all living beings. I will listen with an open mind to those who hold perspectives different from my own in order to transform violence, fear, anger, and confusion in myself and in others. So the version that we're asking you to take is number one. I undertake the training rule to abstain from taking life. I will endeavor to cultivate loving friendliness and compassion towards all beings. And again, you can't do this perfectly. It is. It's a matter of cultivating it, of turning our heart, of turning our intention toward that direction. And the second mindfulness training in my tradition is called generosity. Aware of the suffering caused by social injustice, I am committed to cultivating loving kindness and generosity by sharing my time, energy, and resources with those in need. I'm determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. Through mindful action, I will attempt to reduce the suffering created by the exploitation of human beings and other species. I will practice looking deeply and living in the present moment, aware that chasing after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasure may contribute to suffering in the world. So the second one of the shortened versions is I undertake the training. The training rule to abstain from taking what is not given. I will endeavor to cultivate non-greed and generosity and to respect others' property. I had a very powerful experience when I was in Vietnam with Thay, where one of his senior monastics, one of the nuns, we were going into a very challenging part of town in Hue. We were in Hue at the time, which is in central Vietnam. Lots of poverty. And she didn't say, keep your things close to you so nobody steals from you. She said, keep your things close to you to protect other people from breaking the second mindfulness training. Isn't that lovely? And these mindfulness trainings are such a reflection of how we employ the gentle compassion of understanding with respect to ourselves. But we also employ at times what is a skillful form of fierce compassion by creating boundaries so that other people will not be bound up in their unconscious behavior. And we don't allow people to harm us with their unconscious behavior because that is a way of protecting not just the relationship but our love for the person. So it's a very interesting thing when you begin to think about reframing these and what you're trying to cultivate. The third mindfulness training, sexual responsibility. Aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I am committed to cultivating responsibility and trust in my relationships to promote love and fidelity between partners. I'm determined not to engage in sexual relations without mutual love and a serious commitment. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to safeguard families from being broken by sexual misconduct. And the version that we're asking you to commit to for the weekend is number 3. I undertake the training rule to abstain from sexual misconduct. I will endeavor to cultivate respect for others and circumspection in satisfying sensual pleasure. The fourth mindfulness training, mindful speech. I had to paste this one all over my office and all over my mirror at home so that I could continually remind myself of my aspiration in this direction because I thought this one was the most challenging for me. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I'm determined to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I will not spread news that I do not know to be certain and will not criticize or condemn things of which I am not sure. I will make a mindful effort to keep communications open in times of conflict and to do my best to reconcile and resolve all disagreements, however small. And the fourth one that we ask you to commit to is basically, it should be fairly easy in noble silence, but I undertake the training rule to abstain from false speech. And you can notice when it comes up. I will endeavor to speak truthfully with kind, constructive words. So we'll be in noble silence, which is a very, very, very kind container for all of us. The fifth mindfulness training, mindful consumption. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I'm committed to cultivating good health for myself, my family, and society. I'm determined not to hurt myself or others by abusing intoxicants or other potentially harmful items. I will look deeply into the consequences of what I eat, drink, purchase, and allow into my consciousness, including certain TV programs, magazines, films, and conversations. I know that by mindfully consuming the many wondrous things life has to offer, my well-being will flourish. So this is always a tremendous reminder to me that the cultivation of mindfulness includes not just paying attention to our consumption, but to be aware and pay conscious attention to the kinds of environments that we put ourselves in, who we surround ourselves with, and whether those environments will cultivate the qualities that we notice create that kind of spaciousness in our inner being. The fifth one that we're asking you to commit to is number 5, I undertake the training rule to abstain from intoxicating drinks and drugs causing heedlessness. I will endeavor to purify and strengthen my mind through meditative development. And of course, when we talk about intoxicants, we are not talking about any prescribed medication. We do not, repeat, do not want anybody to stop taking prescribed medication. So I just want to end this opening session by saying it's so important when you're on retreat, especially in the first couple of days, to bring a sense of intentionality and dedication as well as patience to the first couple of days. You'll find that if you practice with wholehearted sincerity while on retreat, your practice is going to accelerate accordingly in a very profound way that you may not notice while you're here. But every drop of mindfulness you put into that mindfulness bucket is available to you at some of the times you need it the most, including when you're in that black hole. And if we're not wholehearted about our practice on retreat, we become retreat observers rather than retreat participants. And I've been on retreats where I was an observer rather than a participant. I've had a parallel agenda. I've had a parallel schedule in mind for myself. And what happened is I continually found myself in this inner negotiation process as I transitioned from the sitting to the walking, to the sitting, to the walking. And, you know, before I knew it, well, should I get something to eat? Should I go back and take a nap? The walking period especially would be over. And it was so interesting to me being on this retreat that I just described where I did every single walking period because I found that sense of vastness in the walking. I found myself moving seamlessly from the sitting to the walking in a way I'd never experienced because I'd never stuck with the walking long enough to experience the joy of walking through these actual mind states. So this practice is about learning how to be embodied in every moment and about learning to have a dedication to the process of waking up. Whether we're sitting or standing, whether we're walking, whether we're going to be going to bed and lying down, whether we're eating, whether we're moving from posture to posture. So I just really want to encourage you to use this evening and the first day tomorrow really well and to begin to develop a thread of awareness even through the dullness and sleepiness that's so often present on the opening night and day of a retreat, and it can be very challenging to sit through that and walk through that. Just see if you can bring a sense of both patience and dedication to each moment. And settling into the first day, day and a half of a retreat is is challenging because we're working with so many mind states a lot of times. And just the most important thing is not to grasp after one kind of mind state, not to get something, just to be here, just to be present. That's what develops the kind of confidence that I'm talking about. Just let tonight begin to be a flow of practice and a flow of mindfulness, a flow of awareness in which everything matters. So we wish you a wonderful retreat. And it's late, and I know people are tired, but how about if we just sit for 5 minutes? And we won't actually, there's a sit in the morning, and I will be here to lead that, but we won't have any instruction until the, 8:45. Oh, there will be a little bit of, Tara's telling me she'll do a little bit of instruction in the first sit. Tiny bit, okay. So let's just sit for a few minutes together. Come back into our body. Just being here. Noticing what's present. Being okay with it. Body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness. We send our hearts along with the sound of the bell. May the hearers awaken from forgetfulness and transcend all anxiety and sorrow. Sweet dreams and a lotus to all of you Buddhists to be. Mm-hmm.